The second case for oral argument this morning is the State of South Dakota versus Thomas Burdick. For the appellant, State of South Dakota is Katie Hansen, an Assistant Attorney General from Pierre. For the appellee, Mr. Burdick is Douglas M. Daly, an attorney from Mitchell. Ms. Hansen, you may proceed. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Katie Hansen. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I'm representing the state of South Dakota. In this appeal, the state is the appellant, and they are appealing the trial court's decision to dismiss 20 counts of third-degree burglary. The following facts were stipulated for the purposes of the preliminary hearing. Defendant was an employee of Land O'Lakes Incorporated from the years 2002 through 2004. As an employee, he drove a milk truck and delivered Land O'Lakes products. On defendant's delivery route was Ron's Market. Ron's Market is owned by Ronald and Colleen Briggs and is located in Plankinton, South Dakota. Ron's Market is separated into two distinct areas, the retail area and the storage area. The retail area is where the merchandise is displayed and made available for sale, and it's in the front. And the storage area is in the back, and it's where the merchandise is stored until it is ready to be moved to the retail area.
But whether the crime had occurred in the front or the back really wouldn't make any difference to the state's theory, would it?
I think
it's a building.
What?
It's a building. It's one building, right?
Right, that's correct.
Okay, so.
So either way, it doesn't matter. You're right. When defendant made his deliveries to Ron's Market, he made them to the storage area through a garage door. Since his delivery route often brought him there late at night or early in the morning, Ron's Market furnished him with a garage door opener, allowing him access to make his delivery when they weren't there. On 20 different and at least 20 occasions when defendant was there delivering his products, he stole one or more cases of pop from the storage area in Ron's Market. He did not have permission to take the pop, and he did not pay for the pop. This is a question of statutory interpretation and application, both of which are questions of law. Conclusions of law are reviewed by this court under the de novo standard, giving no deference to the circuit court's conclusions of law. Defendant's argument is that since his presence in Ron's Market was lawful and authorized pursuant to his employment with Land O'Lakes Incorporated, his actions do not meet the requirements for third-degree burglary. He says that his position is based on the legislative intent that in order for one to commit burglary, they must have unlawful or unauthorized presence inside a structure. The intent of the legislator can be ascertained by examining the express language of the statute. The statute, as it is written now, simply requires that a person enter an unoccupied structure or remain in an unoccupied structure with the intent to commit any crime other than the act of shoplifting or retail theft. Defendant did enter Ron's Market, which was an unoccupied structure, and he did enter or remain with the intent to commit the crime of theft, which is not shoplifting or retail theft.
So if I went in the retail part of it during business hours, bought a candy bar, threw the wrapper on the floor, which was littering, that's burglary?
No.
It's not one of the exceptions.
That's true. Under the statute, it would be considered burglary.
I'm a litterer and a burglar.
That's true.
All right.
But under the facts of this case, he was there. He had the trust of the owners and of his employer, and he was there to deliver pop. And he entered and remained on at least 20 occasions with the intent to steal the pop. I think after the first time, it could be assumed that he entered lawfully and authorized and did not intend to steal from the employer. But after that first time, I think it can be reasonably assumed that he entered or remained with the intent to commit the crime of theft.
Why did Judge Miller reject that last theory? That after the second or the third or the 19th theft, at some point he was remaining to steal?
Because in his decision, he said that the South Dakota Supreme Court explicitly added the element of unlawful or unauthorized entry to third-degree burglary. So his contention was that since he had authorization to be there, it could not fit the third-degree burglary statute. And in his decision, he specifically says that the statutory language does not contain that element. He specifically says that the Supreme Court adds that element. And I think that's important because the legislature is the one who enacts the laws, and it is the judicial branch that enforces and interprets the law. And the trial court is saying that even though the language is not in the statute, that the Supreme Court can add that element of unauthorized or unlawful entry.
You say we don't have that power?
I think the Supreme Court has the power to interpret a statute, but I don't think they have the power to add language to the statute.
So we don't have the power to do what Judge Miller said?
Yes, that's correct.
Do you believe it is the intent of the legislature, as Chief Justice says, that littering, any crime that's committed indoors, unless it's the shoplifting or what it was the other one?
Retail theft.
It becomes burglary. You think that was the intent of the legislature? If he drops his candy wrapper, or if I go in my own home and get on the internet and do something illegal on the internet, that now I'm also guilty of burglary in my own home?
I think when someone's in their own home is a completely different situation.
Oh, it doesn't say that's not an exception, is it?
No, it's not an exception, but when you are in your own home, you are letting yourself enter or remain in that home knowing you are going to commit a crime.
But he was authorized to be in this building, wasn't he?
He was authorized, but the employer authorized him to enter the building to deliver products. He did not authorize him to steal the pop. Had the employer known that he was going to enter to steal the pop, he probably would not have given him permission to enter the building. So I think the difference is, he had permission to be in the building, yes, to deliver products. He did not have permission to commit a crime. And I think that the legislature did intend for any crime rather than retail theft and shoplifting to be considered burglary, because in 1988, after the decision of in the matter of TJE, they specifically changed the statute just to exempt retail theft and shoplifting from being encompassed within the statute.
So the real question in this case is whether or not the legislature can enact a law or enact a law that is a crime, even if it turns out to be stupid in some circumstances. Is that right?
I think the legislature does have the power to enact the laws, even though they may not be the most reasonable to different fact situations.
You're softening my language a little.
But we also have, it's part of the interpretation of statutes, so we can't interpret it. We can't interpret them for absurd results. Isn't that, you would agree with that?
I would agree with that, but I also think that the legislature enacts statutes knowing the judicial decisions. And in matter of TJE, that...
We also assume that the legislature understands the whole scheme of the criminal acts, and that the more serious criminal acts are punished more seriously. I mean, we know that that's their scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take something as insignificant as dropping a candy wrapper inside of a building and say that now is a burglary, which is a what class felony is it?
Class 4 felony, yes.
Which is what? How many years in prison?
Up to
10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And $10,000 fine?
Mm-hmm.
Do we really think that was the intent of the legislature, that kind of a minor act could be that serious an offense? I mean, that is almost an absurd result when you look at the whole scheme of the criminal code. And, of course, they've changed it since, but, I mean, at that point, when you look at the whole scheme of it, how does this fit that's something that insignificant of taking some pop could be worth 10 years in the penitentiary? I mean, that is almost an absurd result, is it not, when you look at it?
It is an absurd result, but I think in order to ascertain the legislature intent, you do have to look at the express language of the statute.
But don't you also have to look at how that fits in the whole criminal code, the scheme of the whole criminal code?
And that's true, and I think that's why they say that the legislature acts with the knowledge of the judicial decisions, and they try to remedy these absurd results when they do amend statutes. But I think up to that point, the statute, the language of the statute is what dictates.
And of course, the legislature enacted a law now. They have changed it for, but effective July 1st, 2006, haven't they?
Yes.
And of course, they've demonstrated in the past that they could make something retroactive if they wanted to, couldn't they?
They could, yes.
And they didn't do that, did they?
No. I also think the decision in State v. DeNoyer that was decided in 1995 overrules both the rulings in State v. Oster and State v. Derby. In State v. Derby, this court had to make the decision of whether a defendant can be convicted of third-degree burglary if his actions constitute shoplifting or retail theft. And this court distinguished shoplifting from retail theft on the basis of entry involved. And the court acknowledged that unlawful or unauthorized entry is an element of third-degree burglary. And then in State v. Ulster, it was along the same lines. This court found that the accused must unlawfully remain. But then in State v. DeNoyer in 1995, this court said, although there may be, or the issue in State v. DeNoyer is whether the jury should have been instructed that the defendant had to have the intent to rape when he entered the structure. And this court found that although there may be merit to this argument under the majority of State v. Oster, we conclude that the current burglary statute simply requires that the person remain in the structure after forming the intent to commit a crime. We overrule Oster to the extent that it provides otherwise. And Justice Sabers, in his opinion, went on to write in the footnote, the statute plainly provides that any person who remains in an occupied structure after forming the intent to commit a crime is guilty of burglary. We must give effect to the plain language. And I think giving effect to the plain language of the statute and applying the facts, defendant does fit the requirements of third-degree burglary. He did enter an unoccupied structure with the intent to commit a crime. In the alternative, if this court does decide that unlawful or unauthorized entry is required for the third-degree burglary statute, I think that the minute the defendant formed the criminal intent to steal from the owners of the store, he was unauthorized or unlawfully in there because he was not authorized to go in there to steal from the owners.
Or in the second instance, he entered with the intent to commit the crime, right?
Yes, I believe so. I think it can be reasonably assumed.
Every time after the first time.
Right, that every time after the first time he had the intent or he remained with the intent to commit the crime.
How many years was he facing for this?
Well, 20 counts up to 10 years, I suppose 200.
200 years?
Mm-hmm. But while he could have been facing up to that much, it's the trial court's discretion in sentencing what they're going to give him as far as a sentence. So just because he's facing up to that many does not mean he would get that kind of a jail sentence. In conclusion, the express language of the statute does not require an unlawful or unauthorized presence. This court has acknowledged in State v. DeNoyer that the plain language of the statute only requires that the defendant enter or remain with the intent to commit a crime. Defendant was a person who entered an unoccupied structure, and he did commit a crime. Therefore, his actions do fit the requirements of third-degree burglary, and the state would request that this court reversed the trial court's dismissal of the third-degree burglary counts. Are there any other questions?
Okay, thank you. We have a friendly rule here that nobody is ever chastised for quitting early. Thank you. Mr. Daly, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court? Morning, Ms. Hansen. The one thing that is clear in this particular case is that both the statute that currently is enforced for third-degree burglary, as well as the court's interpretation of the legislative intent of that statute, is ambiguous. I think that this is a very ripe case to be heard by the Supreme Court if it wasn't for the statute that was amended by the South Dakota State Legislature during the 1995 legislative session, that is scheduled to be enacted in July of 2006 of this year.
So you're saying that our prior decision would not necessarily need to be overruled if we were to rule in your favor or affirm the trial court in this case?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Okay, would you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. The case that we're talking about is the DeNoyer case. And everybody's familiar with the DeNoyer case in that the DeNoyer case, it's a plurality opinion. That's why I don't think that it's an overruling of the decisions that were handed down in the matter of TJE and in the Derby case. Specifically, Justice Sabers wrote the opinion. That's my understanding, and then he was concurred by the Chief Justice now.
Was there anything wrong with the logic in it?
Well, my opinion is the fact that the other three justices concurred in the result but did not concur in the decision to overrule Oster.
But they concurred in the result that it's a crime, that he remained with intent, that he remained in the building with intent. They concurred in that. They just didn't concur in the overruling of a prior case. What effect does that have on the decision?
Well, I think one of the things that's important to note in that particular matter is if you look at the concurring opinion, it discusses the fact that and distinguishes the case of DeNoyer from Oster. They're completely opposite ends of the spectrum with regards to the, I guess, absurdity of the results that we were talking about earlier. In the matter of the Oster case, which was decided that unlawful entry or unauthorized entry was required, this was a situation where a young man was led into this person's house voluntarily as he was seeking help, and at that time stole $34 out of the owner of the home's wallet. Whereas the DeNoyer case, in my opinion, is the opposite end of the spectrum. It dealt with a situation in where a rape occurred, and not only a rape, but somewhat of an aggravated assault or brutal beating. I think that goes all the way back to the common law definition of burglary and what burglary was originally intended to encompass. A burglary initially was intended to protect the sanctity of one's home at night. Well, where we've gotten to with regard to our statutes is to expand this statute of burglary to include basically all crimes in all sorts of structures, whether they're occupied or unoccupied, whether dwellings or not.
Or your own home.
And it goes back to the example that you used about somebody littering in a grocery store being potentially subject to the crime of burglary. And that's an absurd result. There's no question about it. I don't think that the legislature or anybody would want to even try to conclude that the legislature intended someone to be subjected to the state penitentiary for such an offense.
And why did they accept out only retail theft and shoplifting?
Well, the reason I think that they did that, Your Honor, is due to the fact that if you look at the evolution, if you will, of the burglary statute in South Dakota, every time that this court has addressed an issue of the shortcomings of the burglary statute, if you will, they've amended it based upon that particular decision. And that specifically goes back to the matter of in TJE.
They've amended it now. It's not in response to any decision, is it?
Well, I do believe that it is. It's not, the DeNoyer case happened in 1995, and that, in my opinion, created much of the ambiguity that I'm talking about here today. The review of the current criminal codes was enacted based upon, basically the legislature put together a group that was going to review the laws. However, what they did is they've amended it to exactly what we're asking this court to find that the legislature intended initially. And so that's why we're not asking for you to apply this new statute retroactively under the guise of interpretation.
The legislature make it retroactive if they buy into your argument.
Well, and that's a good question. I think they could have. If they would have looked at that, no question about it.
I'll concede that they could have. I'm asking, why didn't they, if they agree with your argument?
Good question. I can't specifically say why they didn't without looking at the laws, that have been interpreted in the cases that have been before this court.
Wasn't that part of a total criminal revision code?
Total criminal revision of the code.
It wasn't just specifically that statute?
No, it wasn't specifically that statute.
Did they make any of it retroactive that you're aware of?
No, that I'm not. And thus, the issue with regard to the fact that when these new statutes were, adopted, they weren't enacted until actually the following year, which is not common practice here in South Dakota. But I guess that's a good question. Maybe they didn't address it based upon the issue in DeNoyer, but I do think the fact that the DeNoyer case, in my opinion, is ambiguous. And I don't think that due to the fact that we didn't have a majority opinion actually overrules Oster.
Why didn't the legislature act after the 2000 decision in Sorensen? Sorensen confirmed that DeNoyer had overruled Oster.
Well, I can't answer that question.
Okay. I mean, they've been active in the area in response to our decisions, but it was pretty clear after Sorensen, wasn't it, that DeNoyer overruled Oster?
Well, I can't answer that question as well, Your Honor, due to the fact that I can't recall off the top of my head the Sorensen decision. So I apologize for not being familiar with that one at this time. I just think that this is one of those situations that common sense tells you it doesn't fit. This is exactly the reason why you have the authority to interpret the legislature's intent behind the statute. When they changed it to exclude the shoplifting and retail theft that was presented before them in front of TJE, it didn't resolve the problems that we have with regard to all other crimes except shoplifting and retail theft would constitute burglary. And that decision, that actual issue, was addressed in the Oster matter. Now, in the Oster matter, they had previously amended the statute to include the language remains after forming intent. And they actually discussed that a little bit in that case. And after the discussion with regard to that new language that was included in there, they also concluded that it's still necessary to have unlawful or unauthorized entry into a building. And the other thing that I think is important to note on this particular case, as well as the burglary statutes in general, is the fact that not only does it make the statute overly broad, but it gives, in my opinion, a prosecutor way too much discretion in how to charge a case that actually could be misused, which I think is the situation in this particular case. Burglary at common law.
Has that ever been a reason for this? I mean, has this court or any other court used that as a reason to interpret a statute in a certain way, that it gives too much discretion to a prosecutor?
Not that I'm aware of. I guess the theory that I was going for is the fact that the original burglary statute protected the sanctity of the home, okay? And it was expanded to protect the sanctity of structures. Well, what ends up happening, in my opinion, with the modern statutes of burglary, is that it was expanded outside of the realm of protecting the sanctity of the structure. And it actually has become a statute that protects the persons and the property that are contained within the structure that are also, that are covered under another statute or another criminal act, which gives the prosecutor the opportunity to charge two offenses for, in my opinion, for one incident. Specifically, in this particular case, is a good example. I mean, we have a gentleman who took pop on 20 occasions, at least, according to the stipulated facts. All of those occasions, the value of the soda pop together does not rise higher than the level of a Class 1 misdemeanor. Each of those particular incidences in and of themselves are a petty theft, Class 2 misdemeanor, punishable by 30 days in the county jail as a maximum sentence. Well, because the burglary statute, if you were to look at the plain language according to the state's argument, that would include all crimes, regardless of other than retail theft and shoplifting, it subjected him to 200 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. Granted, the judge has the discretionary authority to determine what is appropriate under the cases if he were to be convicted of all of those cases, or all of those charges, but I do think that that's just not appropriate to subject someone to that amount of an offense. And I think that rationale is set forth in the matter of TJE, because in that particular case, we had an 11-year-old girl who ate a piece of chocolate while she was in a store. Well, she was charged as a juvenile delinquent and adjudicated that way too under the statute of burglary. Even though the court in that particular case used its discretion and suspended the imposition of the adjudication, this court still held that that young girl should not have been subjected to such an absurd result. And so I think that's the rationale that I'm asking for you to accept in this particular case.
I want to bring you back to something you just said a little bit ago about it being overly broad. Is that is there anything about the fact that it could be, that we could look at this and say it's overly broad, that could enter in an interpretation of legislative intent? In other words, is there a premise that we that has guided this court before, and that we more strictly interpret the language when it's a criminal statute as opposed to overly broad interpretation?
I believe so. In my opinion, Your Honor, that goes to the whole basis of the criminal procedure and the protections that are guaranteed to a criminal defendant through the South Dakota Constitution and the United States Constitution, in that every person
challenged, though, is unconstitutionally overbroad.
No, it hasn't. No. It hasn't, but I think the same theory exists in that every person who is charged with a crime should be given the benefit of the doubt. And so that is my position on the case, that I would agree in your comment or your question, I guess you could say. This is one of those cases that I think the circuit court judge made the appropriate decision. Whether or not the appropriate decision was based at law, in my opinion, is not really the issue of this case, but because this court looks at this in a de novo matter, in other words, without consideration for the trial court's decision. However, I do think that, and this is just my opinion, that part of the decision was made based upon the absurdity of the case, due to the fact that the prosecutor charged this gentleman with 20 counts of a class 2 misdemeanor, petty theft, which carry a maximum sentence of 30 days in the county jail in each, and then he charged him with 20 counts of third-degree burglary. Well, what that, in a sense, does is that eliminates the defendant's ability to have his day in court due to the fact that the risk of being convicted of 20 counts of third-degree burglary so clearly outweighs the benefits or the potential upside of winning at court that he is forced to accept a plea agreement. And so I do think that there
is... What does that have to do with statutory construction?
I don't think it does. I think it goes back to the question of whether or not the court should consider, making a decision in favor of the defendant as far as when they're overly broad to restrict the interpretation of them, Your Honor. I think the interpretation of the legislative's intent is real clear. And again, I think that the South Dakota legislature has gone full circle all the way back towards the intent of the common law burglary by accepting conduct that has, done crimes that are completed during the course of business while the business is open, and or if a person has authorization to be present on the property or is licensed to be on the property. And that gets me back to the state's argument with regard to the fact that they argue that, well, the first time he may have had authorization to enter the building because he may not have had intent prior to going in on the first time. However, the argument is that after the first time, it sure can be presumed that he had intent going into the building, and therefore the intent of committing an offense withdrew any authorization that he had to enter the structure. Well, I don't feel that argument holds any merit if you look at the cases that have been cited by the Supreme Court and from what I'm asking you to hold. And in those cases, specifically the TJE and Derby case, the court has held that a person must have no right to be in the building to be convicted of the offense of burglary. Now, in this particular case, if we were to acknowledge this potential intent prior to going into there, I still think that the defendant has a dual purpose. He may have had a purpose to go in there and take a case of pot, but the real purpose that he was there was to deliver goods in the course of his business with Land O'Lakes. So I don't think that it is appropriate to declare that that eliminates any authorization that he would have to be in the building. I do think that this is one of those situations that needs to be looked at very carefully just because of the actions that were actually taken. I think that this is one of those cases that could have absurd results if this court finds that it is not necessary to have unlawful entry into a building because it will subject this person to 200 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. And that's just not fair. The other issue is the fact that with regard to the legislative amendment that has been made to be enacted in July of this particular year, I don't see the jurisprudence in making a decision that finds that unauthorized entry is not necessary to be convicted of the crime of burglary due to the fact that once that you take a reasonable amount of time to make a decision in this matter, there won't be more than a month or two before the law is changed again. And so I do think that this consideration, I don't want to call it premature, that's maybe not a fair thing to put it, but had this matter been charged out even a few months later than what it was in January of 2005, we may not be here today. Because it's somewhat very coincidental, in my opinion, that at the time he was charged out as committing these 20 counts of burglary, the South Dakota legislature had convened here in Pierre to begin discussing the revamping of the South Dakota criminal statutes and eventually adopted a new law that basically fits exactly with our argument. And it's our position that that just goes to show the legislative's intent that they initially did not intend it to encompass all of these other crimes that it became to encompass. And they have recently just whittled away, I guess you could say, at the statute by eliminating these smaller offenses that have come under the guise of the statute. So with that, I believe the trial court made the appropriate decision. And I am asking for all of your consideration to uphold the trial court's decision and find that the legislative intent of this particular statute was to require either unlawful or unauthorized entry into a Ron's Market or into any business.
Thank you, Mr. Daly.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Hansen, you have 10 minutes.
First of all, defendant made an argument that my argument was that after that first time he entered that he had unlawful entry because he had the intent to commit a crime. That was not my argument. That was my argument in the alternative that the court found that unlawful or unauthorized presence was required. My argument was is that you can, that by his second time you could ascertain that he did have the intent to commit the crime when he went in there, which would fit with the statute as it reads now, because that's all he had to have was the intent to commit the crime. I think defendant places a lot of reliance on the new statute that will be effective in July. That new statute is not in effect right now, and in essence he is trying to use that statute, which isn't in effect, to interpret a statute that was enacted in 1989. I think you need to ascertain the intent of the legislature from the language they used at the time the statute was passed. And I think you can ascertain that the legislature did intend that all crimes be a burglary because they specifically excluded the crimes of shoplifting and retail theft. Had they wanted to, they could have inserted other language exempting other crimes, or they could have inserted the word unlawfully in front of the word remains or enters, but instead they chose to leave that language alone and specifically exclude those two specific crimes. And when he argues that he had dual purposes for being in the building. I think he's correct in saying that. He had the purpose of being in there to deliver his products, and he was in there to commit a crime. And the statute does not require at all that you have to be in there specific, that if you have permission to be in there, that you can't have another purpose. And I think if you looked at this from a different situation, that if he had gone there, delivered his pop, and left, and then come back at a different time, let himself in and stole the pop, I think you would consider that burglary. And I think just because he was there at the same time he's delivering his products, it does not make what he did any less, does not make it fit any less into the burglary statute.
But at one point he had authorization to enter, and the other time he wouldn't under your scenario.
That's true, but at the first time he had authorization to be there to deliver pop, and the second time he still had permission to be in there, but he was in there to commit a crime. And I think it doesn't matter whether he was there for a legitimate purpose or whether he wasn't, because he was there to steal from the owners. And I think that's what the statute is there to protect, is someone who is entering a structure with the intent to commit a crime. And I think the defendant's actions do fit into that statute, because he did enter on at least 20 occasions with the intent to commit the crime of theft. And just by looking at the plain language of the statute, it would indicate that he is guilty of third-degree burglary. And so the state asks that the trial court's decision be reversed.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Court will be in recess until 11 o'clock.